Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 143 of Her, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, her stress, urinary incontinence. Yeah, you heard me right. We're finally going to talk about it. This is so important. Before we start this really terrific episode, just know it's made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, go to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And here's a quick reminder to hop on over to iTunes after our episode and rate and review us because I love to hear from you. I read it all. Your feedback is golden. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
Well, if I get asked one more time by women what to do about stress urinary incontinence, especially women, as they're beginning to get older, that's code for over 40, and want to stay physically active, you want to keep running and doing whatever they're doing, and yet, whoopsies, they're having this issue, and it's an issue cloaked in embarrassment and a lot of social withdrawal, and it's stopping women from continuing their physical activity. We can't have that. So we have an expert, yay, to the rescue, Dr. Sarah Terrell. And she is an assistant professor of exercise science and the exercise science program director at Florida Southern College. And, you know, she's also a certified strength and conditioning specialist through the National Strength and Conditioning Association and an active member of the National Strength Conditioning Association Florida State Advisory Board. She's also one of my colleagues with the American College of Sports Medicine. That's what we love. Yay. And I read a beautiful piece she wrote in the American College of Sports Medicine's Health and Fitness Journal. And I said, I'm dialing this expert up, Dr. Sarah Terrell, and she's going to help us get through this mess. So, you know, why don't we start right on in? First,
yeah,
welcome to
Her
podcast,
well,
Sarah, for crying out loud.
Thank you. Yeah, this is wonderful. I think I couldn't agree with you more on the embarrassment piece. You know, it's a topic that not enough people are addressing. And
well,
for women,
for crying out loud, you know, here you are, you're an exercise physiologist. How much is this affecting women's ability to be able to get up and stay vertical and run around and do their thing?
I would say more than we want to admit. You know, if we go back to, you mentioned a few things as far as even risk factors, but certainly age is one of them for women. You know, you're going to have this incontinence impacting women, twice as many women as men. And for premenopausal women, probably about one out of every four. Once you hit menopause, the numbers aren't so great. It becomes about 50%. One out of every two women are dealing with stress urinary incontinence. And so you're right. It does become an issue that could impact a woman's desire to be physically active. It might lead them to just choosing otherwise, which can be linked with all different kinds of problems if they become inactive. So yes, from an embarrassment side of things, from a prevalence side of things, it is definitely something that can impact women's physical activity levels.
Oh my gosh. You know, so many of us really are frustrated with the fact that there really doesn't seem to be really excellent interventions out there. I think what happens, you know, and I'm a physician, is that I get hit up with, you know, questions about this from women who say to me, you know, all I ever hear about is, you know, just put a pad on and good luck with that, right? And they're basically written off. So you say mm-hmm. that there's a better way, and it also involves specific exercises. So tell us about that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm going to liken it a little bit to, you know, you think about most people would be able to identify their shoulder. Okay. And you'd say, okay, if you had rotator cuff surgery, you would probably say, yeah, there's those small little rotator cuff muscles. I know they're important, but then you don't think about it until you got something going on with your shoulder. And in the same sense, if we can think about our pelvic floor muscles, these are these small muscles that are like a hammock, and they have an incredible responsibility for the body, but we don't think about it until there's something going on with some type of incontinence or urine leakage. So certainly, yes, you could just say, hey, put a pad on it, just deal with it, you know, or I could say, hey, I'm getting shoulder pain, I can just ignore it and continue to do things and move forward. But I think part of the issue is getting people to understand that it is we're talking about a musculature here, just like the rest of our body. It can be responsive to an exercise stress that we put on it. So if you think about your pelvic floor muscles as muscles that actually need to be trained, just like the rest of our muscles need to be trained, you might find those women that, oh my gosh, just put a pad on it, this or that. They may reduce that usage. They may ultimately be able to step away from that practice completely with some focused pelvic floor muscle strengthening.
Okay, now what does it really involve? I mean, first of all, how do they learn about these pelvic floor exercises? I don't see a whole lot of resources out there in terms of, you know, somebody, a specialist, sitting down with them and actually showing them this. So how do they learn?
Well, that's another great question. I think, you know, exercise modalities really that strengthen pelvic floor muscles have been around since the invention of the Kegel exercises in the 1940s. And so what we're looking at there is really with a Kegel exercise, the act of kind of tightening both, you know, anal and vaginal sphincters simultaneously, while also trying to think about lifting that pelvic floor kind of upward and inward. And I think for women, it's kind of weird to think about, right? They're a little bit embarrassed to kind of think about that. To really start to figure out what's going on, you might have to, you know, put your hand down there between the vaginal opening and the anus and really kind of feel that area as you try to contract that area concomitantly. So something like that, just a simple maybe laying on your back, kind of contracting for about 2 to 3 seconds and then relaxing, that is really part of that pelvic floor training, and it goes back to the Kegel exercises.
Okay, so again, where do they actually see this? Is there like any resource? You know, I obviously saw it in the professional journal where they had pictures and back and forth, but where do they learn this? You know, like literally hands-on.
Yeah, well, I would just, you know, say you can talk with specialists in your area. There typically are specialists who deal with urinary incontinence. But even doing a simple Google search, you could find something related to Kegel exercises that often would help somebody kind of understand, you know, what is it exactly that I'm supposed to be doing? I was actually introduced to pelvic floor muscle training not because of, you know, urinary incontinence issue, but I learned about some pelvic floor muscle training for something else I had going on through a local physical therapist. And she actually had been trained in that. And so having gone to her for a couple of sessions and then doing my own, you know, kind of research, I was able to kind of better understand, you know, exactly what it is that goes into it. But there is that embarrassment a little bit. You are like, gosh, do I really have to put my hand down there? Yeah, you might have to in order to try to get a sense of what it is that you're trying to do. And with pelvic floor muscle training, a common mistake is everybody wants to contract all the other musculature at once. So if you were laying on your back and practicing a Kegel, for instance, you know, kind of contracting that vaginal anal, you know, sphincter simultaneously, lifting upward and inwards, and you're on your back, I shouldn't be able to tell that you're doing that. It should be a pretty nonchalant not a lot of excess movement of other muscles that are proximal.
Interesting. And in your article, you also had some nice pictures of other exercises that you could just do on the floor, right?
Right.
So, you know, there was like that little clamshell one where you're moving your legs, bent legs toward each other and then back out again. And I'm also doing bridges and whatever. What does that do?
Right. Great question. So part of what those pictures were trying to show are different positions that you can start with and start in to kind of practice that pelvic floor muscle strengthening that I was describing earlier. And the first, I'd say probably start position I would recommend is laying on your back with your knees bent. And in that position, again, trying to think about, okay, how can I simultaneously contract, you know, vaginal anal sphincter, you know, up and lifting upwards and inwards, and not try to contract my butt, my quads, my hamstrings, but just to focus on that. And so what we were trying to show is if you can do these little contractions, again, in that maybe that position laying down, or even as you mentioned, the clamshell position, things like that, what we're trying to do is also encourage breathing in addition to those types of focused contractions of the pelvic floor musculature. So
well, how does the breathing
floor,
help?
Great question. Yeah. So breathing, if you think about it, we've got the hammock of our pelvic floor musculature kind of, you know, at the bottom of us, if you will. And then if you think about your kind of your core area, we also have our diaphragm. You know, we've got muscles on the front of us and muscles on the back of us. And so there has been some research that, you know, basically says if we can align our breathing, you know, really kind of thinking about that inhalation and exhalation as we're trying to work on the contractions of our pelvic floor musculature, that actually might help improve our strength even more as we're doing those pelvic floor muscle exercises.
Huh. Okay. So, you know, how long does it take? I mean, you're an exercise physiologist, so you know the body better than anybody. How long does it take for a woman who right now has been kind of miserable walking around, you know, with stress, urinary incontinence? How long does it take for her to be able to see a difference if she's following your instructions about doing the Kegels as well as doing these other exercises that really help her isolate the sphincter work and the muscle work she's doing to be able to help control the incontinence? How long does it take?
Excellent question. Yeah. So I think, you know, I think it's analogous to any of our other exercise, you know, kind of protocols that we would have out there. We know that our body responds to the stress that we place on it. You know, so if I decide to start lifting weights and I do that consistently, you know, 3 to 4 times a week over the course of 8 to 12 weeks, I'm probably going to start to see some changes. So in the case of pelvic floor muscle, you know, training, I would say, you know, to really start seeing a noticeable difference, you're going to need to plan for at least 8 to 12 weeks. And that means that somebody is really focused on doing this type of training at least every day. Now, it doesn't take a lot, you know, to do a 2 to 3 second, we call them kind of flicks, you know, hold that contraction for 2 to 3 seconds, take a break for about 2 to 3 seconds. And you do that for up to 10 times, try to do at least 3 sets of that. And if you can do that every day and, you know, continue to do that over the duration of 8 to 12 weeks, you should start to see some changes. But like anything in exercise, we wouldn't do the same program, you know, for 2 years straight or whatever it might be. So you would want to change the intensity eventually of those muscle contractions. So that might be instead of 2 to 3 seconds when you're just kind of learning what you're supposed to feel, eventually you might hold that contraction now for up to 10 seconds and then take it, you know, maybe the same amount of time off. So that overload principle applies in multiple levels here.
Is that kind of like high intensity interval training?
I mean, it is. I guess you could look
see,
at it
I caught
as,
you on that
as
one.
An interval.
I
absolutely
know, seriously.
Right. Yeah. So the work to rest ratio. So definitely high intensity in the sense of just, you know, trying to figure out what is this supposed to feel like? And I do think sometimes reaching out to a professional for the first couple of sessions can help you until you feel more comfortable. And I think a lot of it is just overcoming that fear and that embarrassment of, oh my gosh, we're talking about these muscles down here. Yeah, we are. They're small, but very, very important.
Yeah. You know, well, I really think it's true, though, because you just said it's just like every muscle in the body, right? And so if the rest of the muscles are responding so positively toward, high intensity interval training, meaning that you really see results in terms of strength, endurance, et cetera, why shouldn't it work here too? That's why I'm sort of throwing it out there.
No, absolutely. I mean, and this type of training is probably hands down the best. Pelvic floor muscle training is the best in terms of reducing incontinence, and it works. But it, you know, again, like most exercise programs, you got to be consistent with it. You got to do things correctly. I could tell three people, let's go squat, you know, today, and they're all going to interpret it differently. And just because I told them to squat doesn't mean they're actually doing what I want them to do. And so in this case too, you know, even though I might be doing something every day, you want to make sure that you're doing it correctly. And so, you know, continuing to do their own research, maybe talking to some professionals, that can also help that they're doing things correctly for that response to happen.
Yeah, I just, you know, at the end of the day, Sarah, what I really want is I want to keep women, you know, real physically active out there. And I remember just recently I was dealing with a woman who has always loved to be able to, you know, jump rope. And, you know, she's a, you know, kind of a jogger runner and back and forth. And she started having some problems. And, you know, she's perimenopausal. So she's about 47-ish or so. And, you know, when I told her about the pelvic floor exercises, and I actually showed her your article and the pictures of the routine exercises she can do, you know, at home or at the gym or back and forth, she just looked at me and she says, one more thing, just one more thing. And I said, you know, honey, who was it who said that aging is not for the faint of heart? I mean, but my retort is always something, you know, like, always consider the alternative. be happy we're here to whine about this. But yeah, you know, it's a little tough. Maintenance starts getting to be a little hairy as you get older, to say the least, and it certainly takes longer. You just have to, you know, kind of suck it up to a certain degree and just say, look, you know, if you want to see a result, you just heard it from the expert, Dr. Sarah Terrell. And she's saying, you know, like any muscle, you got to be working it. And, this is not like you have to hit the gym and do powerlifting or something. I mean, this is, you know, what really is, Sarah, at the end of the day, the more I think about it, it's an awareness that no matter where you are, especially when it comes to pelvic floor muscles, you can actually, you know, practice them almost anywhere.
Absolutely.
You know, when you really get down to it, right?
Yeah. And that would, you know, that would be the goal. I mean, I get her frustration. I'm not quite there yet in terms of age bracket, but I'm getting closer. And, you know, when my physical therapist said, oh, you need to do pelvic floor muscle strengthening, I'm like, no, I don't. You know, I do all these other things. I'm this, I'm that, you know. And what dawned on me, kind of like what you're describing, you know, with your friend, is that if I want to get to what it is that I want to do, then I got to make some changes and some adaptations. And it's not necessarily about working harder, it's working smarter. And, you know, through some of these kinds of things, like one thing that I've done, I don't know if this would help your friend or not, but when I go to yoga, I try to go about 15 minutes early. And I work on my pelvic floor muscle strengthening before yoga class. That way I know I get it in. Nobody knows that I'm doing it. And it just becomes part of what I'm doing anyway. And that's manageable to me. You know, I'm not giving up all this other stuff. I think, you know, for women, you've got to find a way. How can we fold it into what we're doing? Or what can you step away from for a while and say, you know what, this is going to have to take priority in order to get to where I need to be. And that's hard. And I think that's like kind of what you're saying. That's part of our process as we age is learning you know, how to make those adaptations.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that that's so terribly important. Heck, it's true if you're a female athlete, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, somehow things aren't quite the way they were like 10 years ago or so. Once you hit a certain age, and that really, again, is code for 40 and over, for all intent and purposes, you just have to kind of get to a point where you adapt and adjust. And this is one mm-hmm. of those. It just happens to be one that's just annoying. And it's also
right.
something that, you know, sometimes, quite frankly, with a lot of my patients, they sound helpless, hopeless, and defeated over it. And I see a lot of them stop their activities, the ones, you know, that have a little bit more jumpy to them. And even with weight training and the rest of it, you know, when you have to Valsalva and hold your breath and push, it can be a
right.
problem, let alone what happens during the day when you're just coughing
right.
or, you know, whatever. Now, I'm going to put my little doctorly hat on here for a second. I'm just going to say that there are a couple little things here. One is, once you get to a point, you have a conversation with your gynecologist, or if there's a female, especially, specialist that you can talk to who can help you, look at like a urologist, who can help you look at this whole issue. That's fine too. Many gynecologists are perfectly fine with this because they see it so often. And then ask about hormonal status. Something that's interesting here is that this is really seen big time as estrogen levels begin to plummet. Now, understanding what happens in the roller coaster of perimenopause, you really don't have a straight line of decline in estrogen levels. What you have is kind of a wiggly one, but if you look at the actual trending, it's going down. And one of the things a lot of women out there have found to be very helpful is actually the estrogen ring. This is an intravaginal ring that you put in, very much like a diaphragm. It's just a ring. And what it does, it gives slow release of estrogen into the vaginal vault. And it's only about 2 milligrams of estrogen, but it's just enough to be able to help support the urinary sphincter, so the ureteral area, so that women actually note that when they're using this, that the level of stress incontinence decreases tremendously. So it's a really strong hormonal association. The ring is kept in for 3 months. And then you replace it. So it's basically a 4 times a year kind of situation. So have a conversation with your gynecologist about the estrogen ring. I've found to be very, very helpful with my patients. The pad that most of my patients really love is Always. That's the brand name. There's many pads out there that work, but Always comes in a bunch of different sizes that are more catered to, well, all the variability we have in body sizes out there. And it also tends to be very absorbent. Obviously, try them all out. But I just seem to have heard a lot more positive results from the Always brand. And so there you have that too. And then as Dr. Sarah Terrell has told us, big time, you've got to do your pelvic floor exercises. That's what you have to do. And this is extremely important if you really want to be able to have sustained success over time in your quest to be able to resolve your stress urinary incontinence. How's that sound, Sarah?
That sounds wonderful. Absolutely.
Cool.
Well said. And I'll also say, too, you know, for folks that are in the exercise industry, when you've got, you know, patients, clients, things like that, you've got to broaden your scope a little bit in terms of thinking about what could be a barrier that's reducing participation. You know, why is it that somebody may not be showing up to a personal training session, this or that? And I think that's also part of what we were trying to push with this article is, you know, it's not just, I mean, certainly it's awareness for women, but it's also awareness for those of us that work with people in exercise that, you know, we've got to have these conversations and figure out ways to help reduce barriers to activity.
Oh, I don't think there's any question. And, you know, your point is extremely well taken. So, you know, medical providers out there have to be very sensitive to this issue, number one, and the frustration and the shame and the embarrassment oftentimes associated with it. At the same time, women, speak up. Tell your medical provider that you need some help here. Where are the resources? You know, many medical practices have special little classes and resources available and specialists they can refer you to be able to help you with all of these exercises, because you need to know. It's sort of like if you've never done a biceps curl, let's find you a trainer so you can do one right with the appropriate form and understand. You know, and the other thing too is I think that women feel a little uncomfortable talking about down there, as we say in the medical profession. Hopefully as the generations are coming through now, the millennials and all the rest of them, they're getting a lot more comfortable with that. But I think it's a generational thing too. So don't just sit there and settle, for crying out loud. Let's get you some help for your stress, urinary incontinence. Any other pearls from you, Sarah?
I think that was well said, and I really hope that this has been helpful for people to take a look at this topic. And like you said, they're not alone. And, you know, there's people out there that can help them, and they don't have to shy away from physical activity. And so hopefully this talk was helpful.
Oh, my gosh. And, you know, your point is extremely well taken. Girlfriends, you are not alone. You are not alone. For that matter, you just heard the statistics from Dr. Terrell. You know, this is extremely common. So get ye some help. Ask for it. Be your best, you know, own self-advocate when it comes to problems like this. Dr. Terrell, thank you so much for being on the HER podcast.
Thank you. All right.
All right. And all of you wonderful people out there, remember to catch every episode of HER. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. Right now, take a moment, rate and review this fabulous podcast we just did on stress urinary incontinence, because it is that important. Okay? Promise, because I'm waiting to hear from you. I'm Dr. Pam Peake. Follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peake or on Twitter at Pam Peake MD. You can also check out our HER show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Thanks for listening and stay well.